sidekick. I figured having her here tonight would not only come in handy for my own sake, but for the investigation as well. If anyone could take Ace's eyes off Sloane for any amount of time, it would be Tilly. Not only because of the way she looks, but she's like a chameleon. She can become whoever she needs to be in order to worm her way into a guy's psyche, and Asa Jackson is next up on her list. When she disappears outside, I glance around the room to make sure no one is paying any attention to me. When I'm in the clear, I head straight for the stairs. Granted, my sneaking up to Sloane's room is not why Tilly is here. In fact, Dalton ordered me to stay away from Sloane tonight and wait until Sunday to give her any attention when Asa is far away from both of us. Luckily, Dalton is outside. So is Asa. And now, so is Tilly. I've got at least a 10-minute window to check on Sloane. She's probably confused by the toast I gave downstairs. Hell, I'm still confused as to why Asa asked me to do it in the first place. Either he's beginning to trust me, or it's a keep-your-enemies-closer kind of situation. I don't waste time knocking when I get to her bedroom. I open the door and shut it just as fast. Then I lock it for good measure. She's sitting on the bed, and as soon as she glances up and realizes it's me, she stands up. Carter, she says, wiping at a tear, you shouldn't be in here. God, she looks beautiful. I was so sick to my stomach when I saw Asa carrying her down the stairs earlier, I refused to allow myself to take it all in. The way her dark curls are cascading around her bare shoulders, the way her dress hugs at her, just like I wish I was doing right now. Fuck. I know I had to down half a bottle of champagne in order to get through the toast earlier, but it's really starting to hit me now. I walk past her without touching her somehow, to the window. I stand to the side of it and look out over the backyard. Asa is on a lounge chair by the pool. Tilly is sitting on the chair next to his. She's leaning forward, engrossing him in conversation. His hands are relaxed behind his head, and even from here I can tell he's staring at her breasts. Dalton is talking to John on the other side of the pool. I glance back at Sloane, and she's standing behind me, shaking her head. Why are you in here? Are you crazy? I nod. Apparently. She's hugging herself nervously, staring up at me. My heart feels like it's about to tear through my chest. It does that sometimes when I do stupid shit like this. Do you want me to leave? She pulls her bottom lip in and chews on it for a second, contemplating. Then she shakes her head. Not yet, she whispers. I reach to her and pull her left arm away from her chest. I slide my fingers around her ring. I can't do this while you're wearing this ring. I slip the ring off her hand and toss it on the bed. Do what? She whispers, looking up at me with a considerable amount of anticipation. Kiss you? I lift my hands to her face, sliding them to the nape of her neck. I'm going to kiss you until I sober up or get caught, whichever comes first. A smile breaks through her fear. Hurry, she says, breathless. Hurry is the last thing I'm gonna do when it comes to her. I tilt my head, feeling her fists clench the front of my shirt. I barely touch my lips to her lips, feathering my mouth against hers. We both release shaky breaths the second we make contact. She's on her tiptoes now, needing me to kiss her fully, to finally give her what we both want. Instead, I pull back and look down at her. When she realizes I'm doing the exact opposite of what she wants, she opens her eyes. I stare down at her mouth, wanting to savor it for one more second before devouring it. I move my right hand back to her cheek, slowly rubbing the pad of my thumb over her bottom lip. What's taking you so long? I stare at her mouth as I trace my thumb over her top lip. I'm worried that once we start, we won't be able to stop. She slides her hands up my neck, sending chills down my back. I think you should have thought that through before you walked into my bedroom. It's a little late to change your mind now. I nod, pulling her to me. I wrap one hand around her back and keep the other wrapped in her hair. Yep, definitely too late. I press my lips to hers and my pulse begins to rage beneath my skin. She's so goddamn sweet, I groan. Her mouth is warm, her lips are cold, and the way she kisses me back makes the room feel hotter than hell. I try to pull her closer, to kiss her deeper, but it isn't enough. We're grasping at each other, attempting to get more from this kiss than we know we're allowed. But her lips, her gasps, her moans, I can't stop. I can't stop. We end up with her back flat against a wall as we knowingly risk our lives to feel this. Our kiss slows down, speeds up, slows down again, stops. We're practically panting as I stare down at her. She's looking up at me with the most tragic expression. I kiss her softly on the lips, then on her cheek. I pull back and press my forehead to hers as we catch our breath. I should go home, I whisper. I need to go before my stupidity gets you killed. She nods, but just as I'm pulling away, she desperately grips my arms. Take me with you. I don't move. Please, she says, her eyes filling with tears. Let's go, now, before I change my mind. I want out of here and I never want to come back. Fuck. Is she really saying this? Please, Carter. Her words are desperate. We can discharge my brother so Asa doesn't use him against me, and wherever we end up, I'll find a way to get him back in the care he needs. Let's just go. My heart is deflating, just like her hope is about to. If she only knew how much I wish I could do that. I start to shake my head, and she moves her hands from my arms to my cheeks. A huge tear spills out of her eye. Carter, please. You don't owe him anything. You can get out. We both can. Right now. I squeeze my eyes shut and roll my forehead to the side of her head. My lips are directly over her ear when I whisper, it's not that easy, Sloan. If it were all up to Luke and Carter didn't have to exist, we'd be halfway across the state already. But if I took her tonight, if we just ran away and I abandoned Ryan in the middle of all this, it would compromise the entire investigation. It would make Asa even more dangerous. And I'd be letting down a whole fucking lot of people, not to mention giving up my entire career. I wouldn't even have a way to support her. I want to get you out of here, Sloan, I whisper. I just can't leave yet. I can't explain why, and I don't know when I can, but I will. I promise. I swear. I press my lips to the side of her head, just as she starts to cry. And as much as I'd give to hold her in my arms until her devastation passes, I can't. Every second I'm in this room with her is another second I'm risking her life. I press my mouth to hers once more and then pull away from her. She lets her head fall back against the wall, and she's so much sadder in this moment than when I even walked inside the room to begin with. She's still gripping my wrist as I try to walk away. When she refuses to let go, I lift her fingers from around my wrist, releasing her. I watch as her arm falls limp to her side. Having to walk away from her like this is nothing short of devastating. It's tragic. And that's where love finds you, in the tragedies.
29. Sloan. I've never missed a single Sunday visiting my brother, and even though I've been in bed since Carter walked away Friday night, pretending to be sick, I somehow pulled myself out of my slump today. Asa and all his friends went to the casino. It's about a 3-hour drive north, and my brother is an hour drive south. It's sad, but I feel like the more distance I put between Asa and myself today, the better I'll feel, the more I'll be able to breathe. Right before I walk out of my bedroom, I pause in the doorway. I reach to my left hand and slip off the ring, setting it on the dresser. I'll be home way before Asa gets back, so he won't notice I didn't wear it today. But my hand will feel 1,000,000 pounds lighter. I stop in the kitchen to make myself a drink for the road. When I reach for the freezer to grab ice, my hand tightens around the door handle. My eyes fall to the new words written on the dry erase board. Pickles don't feel guilty when people yodel, so why aren't the sheets ever folded on Tuesday? I have no idea when Carter wrote this, but I know he wrote it to try to make me feel better about the way he had to leave Friday night. He wrote it to try to make me laugh. It works, because I'm smiling for the first time in 2 days when I open the freezer. I fill my cup with ice and soda, then grab an extra soda for Steven. They don't let him keep sodas in his room due to his health restrictions, so I always sneak him an extra one on Sundays as a treat. With his doctor's permission, of course. I just don't tell Steven that. I grab my purse, my keys, and the drinks and start to head for the door when I receive an incoming text. I wait until I'm at my car to pull my phone out of my purse and read it. Carter, pick me up on the corner of Standard and Wyatt. I want to go with you. My cheeks heat up at the unexpected text. I thought he was with Asa and the guys today. I start to text him back, but another text comes through. Carter, also, never respond to my texts and delete both of these. I do what he requests, and then I back out of my driveway and head to the corner of Standard and Wyatt. It's only a few streets down, and I know he wants me to pick him up there because it's safer than leaving his car in the driveway. But I'm still confused as to how he knew I was even going anywhere. I'm filled with anticipation as I search for him. When I round the corner of Standard, he's right where he said he'd be, standing alone on the curb, hands shoved in the back pockets of his jeans. He smiles when he sees me, and it hurts, and feels incredible. When I come to a stop, he opens the door and climbs inside the car. "What are you doing?" I ask. "Going with you to visit your brother." "But how? How did you get out of gambling, and how did you even know when I was leaving?" He smiles at me, and then leans across the seat and wraps his hand in my hair. He rests his lips against mine and says, "I have my ways." He kisses me, and then moves back to his side of the seat. He pulls on his seatbelt. "If you think it's too risky for me to go inside the building with you, I don't mind waiting in the car. I just really needed some time alone with you." I try to smile, but having him this close reminds me of Friday night and how pathetic I sounded when I tried to beg him to run away with me. I wasn't thinking things through. I can't just up and leave. I'm in the middle of getting my college degree. I can't pull Steven out of his facility and drag him on a cross-country road trip. He's happy there, and I'd be doing him a disservice. I just want out so bad. And after feeling what I felt when Carter kissed me, I got emotional. And it made me wish he was wrong, that he really could save me. Carter reaches across the seat for my hand. "Sloan, can you make me a promise today?" I glance over at him. "Depends on what it is." "I can see in your expression that you're thinking about Friday night. Let's not talk about Asa today, or what we both know needs to happen. I don't even want to discuss the possibility of getting caught or how stupid I am for coming with you. Let's just be Sloan and Luke today, okay?" I raise an eyebrow. "Luke? Who is Luke? Are we role-playing?" His jaw twitches and he says, "I mean Carter. I used to go by my middle name when I was younger. Hard habit to break." I shake my head and laugh. "Do I make you that flustered that you can't even remember which name you go by?" He grips my hand tighter and smiles. "Stop making fun of me. And don't ever call me Luke. Only my grandfather called me Luke, and it's weird." "Okay, but I'm not gonna lie. I kind of like Luke." "Luke." He reaches over and squeezes my knee. "Sloan and Carter. Let's be Sloan and Carter today." He corrects again. "Which one am I?" I tease. "Sloan or Carter?" He laughs, then unbuckles his seatbelt and leans across the seat. He presses his mouth to my ear and slides the palm of his hand over my thigh. I hold my breath and grip the steering wheel when he whispers, "You be Sloan, I'll be Carter. And on our way home this afternoon, we'll pull over somewhere quiet and you can be Sloan in the back seat with Carter. Sound good?" I exhale with my nod. "Uh-huh."
30. Carter. "When is the last time Asa visited?" I ask her. She turns off the car and begins gathering her things. 2 years ago, He's only been here once. He said it made him uncomfortable. Of course he'd say that. So no one would think it's odd that I'm walking in with you? Sloane shakes her head. I think the employees are so used to seeing me alone, they'd only be curious that I finally showed up with someone. But they wouldn't be suspicious or tell Asa because they don't even know Asa. She drops her keys and her phone in her purse and then grips the steering wheel. She stares out over the parking lot in front of us. That's really sad, isn't it? That I have no one? Literally no one? It's always just been me and Steven against the whole goddamn world. I reach over and tuck a strand of hair behind her ear. I want to comfort her, to tell her she has me. But she's being so honest right now, I don't want to feed her another lie. She doesn't even know my real name, and the more lies I tell her in moments like these, the harder it'll be for her to forgive me when she finds out the truth. Which she almost did earlier. I swear to God, sometimes I wonder how I ever got this position to begin with. I am the worst undercover detective that ever existed. Seriously, they should call me the Pink Panther. Sometimes I think maybe she could handle it if I told her the truth, that maybe she would be able to help out in some way. But that would only put her in more danger, and I already do that enough. Maybe in time, if I can get her to earn Ryan's trust, he'll see the benefit of filling her in. But for now, it's better she doesn't know. She's still staring blankly out the window, so I pull her to me and hug her. She wraps her arms around me and sighs against my neck, and I wish Asa would fucking die on the way back from the casino. Shit, that was really harsh. But can he not see how much better the lives of those around him would be if he didn't exist? Of course he can't. You see nothing outside the realm of yourself when you're a sadistic narcissist. You give really nice hugs, Sloane says. I hug her tighter. I think you just haven't been given enough hugs in your lifetime. That too, she says with a sigh. I keep my grip on her for a moment longer until she whispers against my neck. 56 king crabs ate shoelaces for Easter dinner and then they coughed up rainbow bright through their nostrils. I laugh and kiss her on top of her head. You can't buy illegal butter with a bike wheel or a silly string. I can feel her smile when she finds my mouth and kisses me. That's all I wanted before we get out of this car, for her smile to return. You said he didn't like Asa, I say on her way down the hall toward Steven's room. So if he doesn't communicate, how do you know if he likes or dislikes someone? She's been filling me in on her brother's condition during the walk to his room. She listed off about 5 things he's been diagnosed with, but I can't even remember the names of them, so the least I can do is try to understand them. We have our own way of communicating, she says. I've practically raised him since he was an infant. She rounds the corner and points down a hallway. He's down here, at the end. I still have questions, so I pull on her hand until we come to a stop. But you're only a few years older than him. How did you raise him? She looks up at me and shrugs. I did what I had to, Carter. No one else was around to do it. I don't know that I've ever met anyone like her. I kiss her, partly because I want to get as many kisses in as we can today, and partly because she deserves a little more affection in her life. Selfless affection. I don't mean for the kiss to be anything more than a second or two, but we haven't been able to kiss like this since our first kiss. I'm instantly pulled into it and everything else fades away. Until someone clears their throat behind us. We pull apart to see a nurse attempting to exit the doorway we're blocking. Sloane apologizes and then starts laughing as we rush down the hallway to Steven's room. She knocks on the door and then pushes it open. I follow her inside, immediately impressed with the facility. I expected more of a nursing home or hospital room setup, but these are more like miniature apartments. There's a small living area attached to a sleeping area and a kitchenette. I notice there's no stove or microwave, though, which probably means he has to have all his meals prepared for him. Sloane walks into the living area to greet her brother, but I wait in the entryway, not wanting to interrupt them. Steven is sitting on the couch, watching the television. He glances up at Sloane, and I can immediately see the resemblance. They have the same hair color, same hair texture, same eyes. But his face is expressionless. He turns back to the TV and my heart instantly aches for Sloane. The one person in this world she loves doesn't have the capacity to express his love in return. No wonder she seems so lonely. She's probably the loneliest person I've ever met. Stephen, there's someone I'd like you to meet, she says, pointing in my direction. That's my friend, Carter. We go to school together. Stephen looks at me, but then looks back at the TV just as quick. Sloan pats the couch next door, requesting me to come sit by her. I walk over and sit down, watching her interact with him. She begins pulling things out of her purse, nail clippers, paper, a pen, a soda. She talks to him the whole time, telling him about the drive over and giving him her thoughts on the new resident she noticed next door. You on ice? She asks. I glance at Stephen, but he gives no indication that he wants ice. Sloan points in the kitchen area. Carter, will you make a glass of ice for him and get the blue straw out of the top left-hand drawer? I nod and go to the kitchen to make his cup of ice. I notice she grabs a pen and starts writing something down. She slides the paper over to Stephen and he instantly looks at it, grabs the pen and leans forward to write something in return. He can read and write? She didn't mention that. When I'm finished with the cup of ice, I walk back to the living room and hand it to her. She finishes writing something else and hands the paper back to Stephen, then pours his soda into the glass. As soon as she sticks the straw in it, Stephen grabs it out of her hand and begins drinking it. He hands her back the paper and she hands it to me. I read what she wrote first. Books made out of jelly beans get really sticky when you wear furry gloves. I read what Stephen wrote next. His writing isn't as legible as hers, but I can make out what it says. Baskets of lizards on my head break the cotton in half for you. I glance at Sloane as she shoots me a small smile. I recall our first day in class together when I saw her doing this for the first time. She said it was just a game she plays sometimes. I guess this is what she meant. She plays it on Sundays with Stephen. Can he read almost anything? I ask her. She shakes her head. He doesn't really comprehend. I taught him how to read and write when we were younger, but stringing full thoughts together has never been something I've seen him do on paper. It's his favorite game to play. I look over at Stephen. Can I write something, Stephen? I reach out for the pen and he hands it to me, but he still doesn't look at me. I press it to the paper. Your sister is amazing and you're very lucky to have her. I hand Sloan the paper and she reads it before handing it to Stephen. She blushes and nudges me in the shoulder, then passes the pen and paper off to him. And that's what we do for the next 10 pages. Stephen and Sloan write random words back and forth, and I just write down a bunch of compliments about Sloan. Your sister has great hair. I especially love it when she curls it. Did you know your sister cleans up after several men who don't know how to lift a damn finger, and no one has probably ever told her thank you? Thank you, Sloan. Your sister's ring finger looks beautiful and bare today. I like your sister. A lot. After about an hour, a nurse comes in and interrupts the game to take Stephen to physical therapy. Is the social worker in today? Sloan asks. The nurse shakes her head. Not on Sundays, but I'll leave a note in her box when he's finished with therapy so she'll know to contact you tomorrow. Sloan tells her that would be great, and then she walks over to give Stephen a hug. When she's finished with her goodbye, I'm honestly not sure what to do. I don't want to pretend I'm an expert at interacting with individuals like Stephen, but I also don't want to do something I shouldn't do. Does he shake hands? I ask Sloan. She shakes her head. He doesn't really let anyone but me touch him. She slips her hand through mine. It was nice meeting you, Stephen, I say to him. Sloan grabs her purse and we begin to walk out of the room so the nurse can do what she needs to do to prepare him for therapy. When we're almost to the door, I feel a tap on my shoulder. I turn around to find Stephen standing in front of me, eyes on the floor, rocking back and forth on his heels. He hands me the pen and a blank sheet of paper. I take it from him, not really knowing how to tell him we're leaving and we can't keep playing. I glance at Sloane to see what she wants me to do, and I'm confused by her expression. Stephen walks back into the living room, away from us. I look down at the blank sheet of paper and pen. He wants you to come back, she whispers. When I glance up at her again, she's smiling, shaking her head back and forth. I've never seen that happen before, Carter. She covers her mouth with her hand and lets out a mixture of what could be both a laugh and a cry. He likes you. I look at Stephen, and his back is to us now. When I return my attention to Sloane, she stands on her tiptoes and kisses me, then leads me out of the room. I fold up the paper and slip it and the pen in my back pocket. I don't know what I was expecting today, but it certainly wasn't that. I'm glad I came, but now it's not only because of Sloane.
31. Asa. I remember this being a hell of a lot more fun last month. I run my hand through my hair, squeezing the back of my neck. I'm hungry. I look over at Kevin and Dalton, who are engrossed in conversation with some bartender who looks more like a girl John would take behind the building than either of them would entertain. The only reason why John probably isn't fucking her behind the building right now is because he left with two lot lizards from the truck stop next door. Probably took them to the men's room. Which surprises me that he was even able to do that with the way his face is puffed up like a fucking blueberry. He should be back by now, though, because I'm pretty sure he can't last more than 2 minutes with a chick. There were two of them. That's only 4 minutes. But I haven't seen him in over an hour. Where the hell is he? I look around, and when I don't see him in the vicinity, I cash out my chips. I yell across the table, over the obnoxious fucking slot machine bells, and tell Dalton and Kevin I'm going to look for John. Dalton nods. I make it to the other side of the casino without finding him. I turn back and walk past a blackjack table when my eyes fall on a guy slurring something to the dealer.
Every time I come to this goddamn casino, I see the same miserable motherfuckers hunched over these tables, handing over their hard-earned wages to you goddamn assholes, and you just keep taking. Taking, taking, taking.
The dealer scoops the chips out from in front of the guy. A man across the table says,
"And 9 times out of 10, that miserable motherfucker is you."
I laugh and make eye contact with the man who just spoke. I stop laughing. He glances away from me without even a flash of recognition. The guy doing the complaining pushes his stool away from the table and stands. He points at the guy I'm staring at and says,
"You got lucky, Paul. That's all. Won't last."
I'm clenching my fists so hard I'm drawing blood. I can feel it seeping out of my palm. I didn't even have to hear his name confirmed to know it was him. A son doesn't forget his father. No matter how easy it was for that father to forget his son. I turn my back to him and wipe the blood from my hand onto the leg of my jeans. I pull my phone out and do a quick Google search. After a few minutes of scrolling through the results and glancing back and forth from him to my phone, I finally find what I'm looking for. The motherfucker was paroled last year. I slide my phone into my pocket and walk over to the empty seat across from him. I've never been this tense, but it isn't because I'm scared of what he'll do to me anymore. I'm tense because I'm scared of what I want to do to him. I lay down my bet and try not to make it obvious that I'm staring, but he isn't paying me any attention. He's focused on the dealer. His hair is so thin, he might even be considered bald if it weren't for the last few strands he's pathetically holding on to. I run my hand through my hair. It feels as thick as it always has. Maybe he lost his hair because of stress, and it isn't hereditary. God, I hope nothing about this man is hereditary. He looks like a fucking waste of space. I remember my father being much taller, much broader, much more intimidating. I'm a little disappointed. Actually, I'm a lot disappointed. I've always hated the motherfucker, but the memories I have of him made me think he was invincible, which made me feel like maybe I got a little of that from him. But seeing how he's turned out really puts a fucking wrinkle in my pride.
"Hey, kid," he says, snapping his bony fingers. "You got a smoke?"
My eyes meet his, and he's staring at me, trying to bum a cigarette off of his only fucking child, and he doesn't even recognize me. Not even a little bit.
I don't fucking smoke, asshole.
He chuckles and holds up a hand, palm out.
Whoa there, buddy.
Bad day?
He thinks that was me having an attitude. I turn a chip over in my fingers and lean forward.
You could say that.
He shakes his head, and we're silent for the next round of bets. An older chick with tits more wrinkled than my old man's knuckles sidles up next to him and puts her arm around him.
I'm ready to go,
she whines. He sticks his elbow out to shove her off of him and says,
I'm not. I told you I'd find you when I'm ready.
She whines some more until he pulls a 20 out of his pocket and tells her to go play some penny slots. When she's gone, I nudge my head in her direction.
That your wife?
He chuckles again.
No. Fuck no.
I flip my first card over. It's a 10 of hearts.
You ever been married?
I ask him. He brings his hand up to his neck and pops it, but doesn't look at me.
Once.
Didn't last long.
Yeah, I know. I was there.
Was she a whore? I ask him. Is that why you aren't married to her anymore? He laughs and makes eye contact with me again.
Yeah. Yeah, she was.
I blow out a slow breath, then flip over my second card. An ace of clubs.
Blackjack.
I'm getting married, I say. But she's not a whore. I don't think I'm making any sense to him, because he tilts his head and his eyes narrow a little. Then he leans forward and taps the edge of the table.
Let me give you a piece of advice, son.
Don't call me son.
He pauses for a second, and I recognize a flash of the condescending look he used to give. Then he says,
They're all whores. You're young. Don't settle down. Enjoy your life.
I do fucking enjoy my life. I enjoy it a whole fucking bunch.
He shakes his head and then mutters,
You're the angriest son of a bitch I've ever met.
He's right. I am. I've never been angrier than I am in this moment. I want to climb across this table and shove my cards down his throat, despite the fact that it's a winning hand. The dealer pushes my winnings in front of me, but I stand up and walk away before I do something stupid, inside a building full of security cameras and security guards.
Sir,
the dealer calls after me.
You can't walk away from your chips.
Keep the fucking chips.
I walk as fast as I can from one side of the casino to the other. I finally find John, flanked by the two lot lizards at a fucking pussy-ass Wheel of Fortune game.
Go find Dalton and Kevin. We're leaving.
I walk toward the exit, and as soon as I shove open the doors, I bend forward, gasping for breath.
I'm not like him.
I'm nothing like him.
He's pathetic. He's weak. He's fucking bald, for Christ's sake. My hands are shaking.
Hey!
I get the attention of a man who just exited. Can I bum one of those? He puts his cigarette in his mouth to reach into his pocket for another one. He hands it to me, then offers me a lighter. I light it and mutter thanks, then inhale a long drag of it. I'm still pacing when the guys finally make it outside. But not far behind them, I see him, the wrinkled tit lot lizard flanked to his arm. They're making their way toward the exit.
Let's go,
John says, once they're all outside. I shake my head and don't take my eyes off my father. We'll leave in a second. I continue staring at them as they walk toward the exit. Once they push through the doors and are outside, his eyes land on me. He notices the cigarette in my mouth as he passes me.
I thought you said you didn't smoke.
I don't, I say, blowing smoke toward him.
This is my first. Again with the condescending looks. They're the same condescending looks he used to give me when I was a kid. Only this time, they aren't served up with a beating. From his end, anyway. They keep walking, and when they're about 5 feet away, I say, "You have a lovely afternoon, Paul Jackson." My father stops walking, waiting a few seconds before turning around. When he finally does, I see it, the recognition. He cocks his head and says, "I never told you my name." I shrug, and then drop my cigarette to the concrete, snuffing it out with the heel of my shoe. My bad. Guess I should have said, "Dad." There's no second guessing whether that's recognition on his face now.
Asa?
He takes a step forward, but that was his second mistake. His first was not remembering me to begin with. I stride over to him and come down on him with both fists. The pathetic fuck hits the ground before I even follow through with a full swing. I can feel one of the guys trying to pull me off of him. The bitch is screaming in my ear, scratching at my face, trying to get me off of him. I punch him again. I punch him for every year he left me alone. I punch him for every time he called my mother a whore. I punch him for every piece of fucked up advice he ever gave me. I keep punching him until my fists are covered in blood and I can no longer see my father's face. There's so much blood, I'm pretty sure I even mistake the concrete for his head, because that punch hurts the worst. When the guys finally pull me off him and start dragging me toward the car, I feel the wet shit on my face. The shit my father told me is what makes the difference between men and pussies. Yes, I'm talking about tears. I can feel them, and I can't fucking stop them, and I've never felt so powerful and so weak in my whole fucking life. I have no idea how I make it to the passenger seat, or who even put me here, but I'm fucking beating the dashboard, punching it so hard it cracks. Kevin is peeling out of the parking lot, I'm sure trying to beat security before they find the bloody mess I left at their front entry. John reaches around my seat and tries to pull my arms behind me, but he's stupider than I thought if he thinks he can hold me back. I tear my arms from his grip and start punching the dash again. I'll punch it until my hands are numb or this shit stops coming out of my fucking eyes. I'm not turning into him. I'm not fucking turning into that pathetic bastard. I don't want to feel this anymore.
"Somebody fucking give me something!"
I yell. It feels like my bones are trying to tear through my skin. I pull at my hair. I punch the fucking window.
"I can't fucking breathe!"
Kevin rolls down the window, but it doesn't help.
"Give me something!"
I yell again. I turn around and try to grab John, but he leans back and lifts his fucking leg up, like that'll protect him from me.
"Now! It's in the trunk!"
John yells.
"Christ, Kevin! Pull over so we can calm him the fuck down!"
I turn around and punch at the dash again. Several punches later, John returns to the back seat.
"Give me 2 seconds,"
he says. He's a fucking liar, because it's more like 10 seconds before he hands me the needle. I pull the cap off with my teeth and shove it in my arm. I lean back in my seat.
"Go,"
I say to Kevin. I close my eyes and feel the car begin to move.
I am nothing like him.
And they are not all whores. Sloan is not a whore. She's heroin, I whisper. Heroin is nice.
32. Carter. "What are you hungry for?" I ask her. She wanted me to drive back, so I've been looking for a restaurant for the last 5 miles. "I don't care," she says. "Anything but Greek." "You don't like Greek food?" she shrugs. It's okay. There's just not a Greek restaurant until the next town, and I'm hungry. If you wanted Greek, I'd have to wait too long to eat. I laugh. She's so goddamn adorable. I reach over to take her hand, but receive an incoming text. I normally wouldn't text and drive, especially with Sloane in the car, but Dalton said he'd warn me if they decided to come back early. And sure enough, the text is from Dalton. Dalton, time for you to head back. Ace is not in good shape. Oh shit, did my death wish curse him earlier? Me, were you guys in a car wreck? Dalton, no, he just beat the shit out of his father and he's having a major fucking breakdown. Dalton, he keeps rambling about how Sloane better be there by the time he gets back. Never seen him like this, man. I delete the texts and then set my phone back in the cup holder. I grip the steering wheel. Sorry, but we can't stop and eat. Dalton says Asa had a breakdown and they're on their way back. A breakdown? Sloane says. Yeah, something about his father. Apparently he beat him up at the casino. Sloane looks out the window. His father is alive? I glance over at her. She doesn't know about his father being charged for murder. I guess it makes sense that Asa wouldn't tell her. That's not really something you would want your girlfriend to know. He doesn't know you're with me. We don't have to get back before them. I'm hungry, she says. I hate that I'm forcing her to go back home when she needs to stay the hell away from there. Dalton says he's adamant that you be there. Apparently he's in pretty bad shape. She sighs. That's not my problem. Why does Dalton know you're with me anyway? I don't trust Dalton or John or Kevin. Don't worry, I trust Dalton with my life. I reach over and take her hand, pulling it onto my lap. I'll park in my car and then come over later tonight. I think there should be some distance between you getting home and me showing up. She nods, but she doesn't say anything else on the drive home. We're both dreading the inevitable, which is coming face to face with an unstable Asa Jackson. He's bad enough when he's in a good mood. I don't even want to think of how he's going to treat Sloane tonight. When we reach my car, I look around to make sure I don't see anyone. I parked a couple miles from her house and then walked the rest of the way this morning. Before I get out of the car, I pull her to me and kiss her. She kisses me back with a sigh, and it's kind of sad, like she's tired of saying goodbye like this. How come it seems every time we take a step forward, we're forced to take 10 steps back? She asks. I push a strand of hair off her forehead. We'll just have to start taking bigger steps forward. She forces a smile and then says, I hate that I won't get to talk to you when you come over tonight, or touch you. I kiss her forehead. Me too, I say. We should have a sign we can use in place of being able to talk tonight. Something subtle that only we'll notice. Like what? I lift my hand and rub my thumb across my bottom lip. That's mine, I tell her. She crinkles up her nose while she tries to think of one. You should twirl a strand of hair around your finger, I suggest. I like it when you do that. She smiles. Okay. If you see me doing that, it means I wish I could be alone with you. She pulls at a strand of her hair and twirls it around her finger. I lean forward and kiss her, then force myself out of her car. I wait until she drives away before texting Dalton again. May, don't let him alone with her before I get there. I'm scared of what he might do. Dalton, noted. Not sure what's going on with him. He shot up, slept for 10 minutes, now he's talking incessantly. He keeps saying he wants spaghetti and that his hair is really thick. He's not making any sense. He even made Kevin run his hand through his hair. Fuck. He's already unpredictable. This isn't good. Me. Let me know as soon as you all get back. I'll wait an hour and then head that way. Dalton. Good idea. By the way, he said you were LSD. What do you think that means? Why did he call you LSD? Me. No fucking clue. Dalton. He said, Carter causes the worst hallucinations and he's hard to fucking locate. He's LSD. Me. He's out of his fucking mind.
33. Sloane. My phone is ringing as soon as I walk through the front door. I glance down at the screen and see that it's Asa. Great. I slide my thumb across the screen to answer it. Hey.
Hey, baby,
he says. He sounds like he just woke up, but I can tell he's still in a car.
Are you home?
Yep, just walked in the door. Are you still at the casino?
Nope, he says. On our way back.
So I heard.
We're hungry. We want spaghetti. Can you cook some?
I have a lot of homework to do. Wasn't really planning on cooking tonight. He sighs and says,
yeah, well, I wasn't really planning on craving spaghetti.
Sounds like we have a dilemma, I say, uninterested.
Not to me. Make some fucking spaghetti, Sloane. Please. I'm having kind of a bad day here.
I close my eyes and fall onto the couch. This is going to be a long night. I might as well make it as easy on myself as possible. Okay, I'll make you spaghetti. Would you like meatballs with that, dear?
I would love meatballs. We want meatballs, right, guys?
I hear a couple of the guys in the car mutter, sure. I kick my legs up on the arm of the couch and put the phone on speaker, resting it on my chest. Why are you having a bad day? It's quiet for a minute, and then Asa says,
have I ever told you about my father, Sloane?
No, he sighs.
Exactly. There's nothing to fucking tell.
Jesus, what in the hell did that man do to him? I rub my fingers against my temples. When will you be back? Asa doesn't answer my question. Instead, he says,
is Carter there?
I immediately sit up on the couch. Blame the paranoia, but my voice grows a little weaker. I try to hide it when I say, no, Asa, he's with you. There's a short pause.
No, Sloane, he isn't.
The phone grows even quieter, and when I look down at it, I realize he hung up. I press the phone to my forehead. What does he know? An hour later, they all walk through the front door. I'm not finished with the spaghetti yet because I had to go to the store to get the damn noodles. Asa walks into the kitchen, and I gasp when I look up at him. His shirt is covered in blood, and his fist is almost unrecognizable. I immediately rush to the first aid kit in the pantry. Come here, I tell him, directing him to the sink. I run water over his hand, trying to find where the blood is coming from, but it seems like it's coming from everywhere. His whole fist looks like raw flesh. My stomach turns, but I force myself to finish cleaning it so I can bandage it up and not have to look at it. What in the hell did you do, Asa? He winces and looks down at his hand. Then he shrugs.
Not enough.
I put ointment all over his hand and then wrap it, but that's hardly going to help. He probably needs stitches. Several stitches. I feel his hand clamp tightly around mine and my eyes dart up to his.
Where's your fucking ring?
Shit. On the dresser. I didn't want to get it dirty while I cooked. He stands up and yanks my arm, pulling me toward the stairs. I can feel the pull all the way up to my neck. Asa, stop! He doesn't let go of me, and when he drags me behind him through the living room, Dalton stands up.
Asa,
he says. Asa still doesn't stop. I have to run just to keep up with him as he takes the stairs two at a time so I don't fall down. He swings the bedroom door open and grabs my ring off the dresser, pulling my left hand up between us.
You keep your fucking ring on your hand. That's why I bought it for you, so people would know they can't mess with you.
He slaps my hand on the dresser and then opens the top drawer, holding my hand down flat with his. What are you doing? I ask, fearing the answer. He opens the second drawer and rifles through it.
Helping you remember never to take it off,
he says, grabbing a tube and slamming the dresser drawer shut. My eyes land on the bottle of superglue in his hand. The hell he is. I try to yank my hand back, but he uses even more force to hold down my wrist. He pulls the cap off the superglue and starts squirting it on my finger, spreading it under my ring. The tears begin stinging at my eyes. I've never seen him like this, and I don't want to push things even more. I stop fighting and stand as still as I can, aside from my heart racing in my chest. Carter isn't here, and I'm honestly too scared to fight back right now because I'm not sure that any of those guys downstairs would come to my defense. Asa tosses the superglue on the dresser and lifts my hand, then blows on it to dry the glue. He stares at me the whole time he's blowing on my finger. His eyes are black. Huge and black and terrifying. You finished? I whisper. I don't want to overcook your spaghetti. He blows on my hand for a few more seconds and then leans in and kisses my palm. All done. Now you won't forget. He's crazy. He's fucking crazy. I think I've always known he wasn't a great person, but I had no idea how crazy he was until looking at his eyes just now. Asa follows me out of the bedroom and down the stairs. Dalton is standing at the base of the stairs, and I can see the concern in his eyes. I still don't trust him. I walk back into the kitchen and straight to the stove. I pull the pasta off the burner and begin pouring it into the strainer just as a car pulls up in the driveway. Carter. I finish straining the pasta, staring down at my ring the whole time. It's not even straight. It'll be a bitch peeling off the superglue and will probably take me days. The least the asshole could have done was make sure he glued it on straight. It's going to drive me crazy. I make sure not to look at the front door when it opens. I go back to the stove and stir the spaghetti sauce, then check the meatballs. Asa is washing blood off his arms at the sink when Carter walks into the kitchen and opens the refrigerator.
What happened to you? Carter says.
I can't make out what Asa says, thanks to the pulse still pounding in my ears, but Carter laughs.
You guys win any jackpots?
I turn around and walk to the sink, catching a glimpse of Carter out of the corner of my eye. Asa shakes his head and says,
Not a goddamn thing. Not like that jackpot you had wrapped around you Friday night.
It feels like all the blood completely leaves my heart. I can't look at Carter right now. I can't. Either Asa is testing me to see if I react to that statement, or Carter isn't at all who I thought he was.
She was a motherfucking firecracker, Asa adds. Good job, man. I was definitely impressed.
I move to check on the meatballs, but only so I can get a glimpse of Carter's face. He takes a sip of his beer, not making eye contact with me.
She's just a friend, he says.
I have to grip the oven door with all my strength because it feels like I'm about to crash to the floor. What girl? When? Friday night was when Carter came to my room and kissed me. How in the world did I not know he was here with someone else? I feel like more of a fool in this moment than I've ever felt dating Asa. At least I've always known Asa is an asshole. I honestly thought Carter was different.
A friend, my ass, Asa says. Do you hump Dalton against the living room wall like that? John? Where I come from, friends don't do that to friends, my man.
I'm forced to walk the long way around the island as I prepare the food just to avoid either of them seeing the tears in my eyes. A few seconds later, I feel Asa's arm slip around my waist. He kisses my neck, and fuck if I don't turn around and plant my mouth on his. As much as I hate him, and as much as I want to cut his dick off for what he just did to me upstairs, this kiss isn't at all about him. I want Carter to feel what I just felt, like there's a huge gash in my chest. Fucking bastard. They're all fucking bastards. I pull away from Asa. You're making it hard to concentrate. You guys get out of the kitchen so I can finish cooking. I have no idea how I'm able to speak, because each of my words wants to turn to sobs. I drop all the meatballs into the sauce, and as I'm pouring the pasta in, Dalton walks in the kitchen.
Christ, Asa. Go take a fucking shower. We'll all lose our appetite if we have to stare at all that blood while we eat.
I use Dalton's distraction to glance over at Carter. He's staring right at me, his eyes full of concern. It's like he's trying to tell me a million things right now. He lifts his hand and runs his thumb over his bottom lip. I don't twirl my hair around my finger. Instead, I rub my mouth with my middle finger and then turn to face Asa. He pushes my hair over my shoulder.
You should come shower with me. It'll be kind of hard to do it one-handed.
I shake my head. Later. I have to finish cooking. Asa runs his fingers down my arm, sliding them over my hand and over my ring. He turns and walks out of the kitchen. Dalton follows him. As soon as I'm alone with Carter, he's rushing across the kitchen toward me. He stops when he reaches me and comes as close as he can without it looking suspicious. I grip the counter in front of me and don't look up at him.
It wasn't like that, Sloan. I swear you have to trust me.
His words come out in a rushed, desperate whisper. I don't look at him when I say, "You were making out with another girl." I slowly turn my head and make eye contact, and I can almost swear he's about to risk getting caught and pull me to him. He starts shaking his head.
"I wouldn't do that to you. It wasn't like that."
His words are slow and precise this time. Everything about him makes me want to trust what he's saying, but everything about every single male from my past tells me never to trust anyone with a dick. He glances around to make sure no one can see us. All the guys in the living room have their backs to us, and they're facing the TV. Carter leans in and squeezes my wrist.
"I would never do anything to hurt you. Ever. I swear on your brother's life, Sloan."
And that's when I really get angry. No one swears on my brother's life. It's over before I even realized I did it. I slapped him so hard, all the guys in the living room turned around in their seats. I can't believe I just slapped him. I can't tell who's more shocked by it, me, him, or all the guys who are now staring at us. I'm more hurt than I've probably ever been in my life, but I'm still smart enough to know I need to find a reason for slapping him so it doesn't appear personal to everyone staring at us. "Don't dip your finger in the spaghetti sauce, asshole! That's disgusting!" Carter immediately realizes what I'm doing. He forces a laugh and rubs his cheek, but I can see the disappointment in his eyes as he turns and walks toward the living room. I don't feel bad for him. My brother and I have had enough bad luck. The last thing we need is for Carter to be telling lies and making empty promises while swearing on Steven's life. I spin around, and I stir the fucking spaghetti. I pause to wipe tears away with the sleeve of my shirt, and then I start stirring again. A minute later, Dalton appears at my side and reaches across me. He grabs a spoon and dips it in the sauce, then puts the spoon in his mouth to taste it. He nods, and then tosses the spoon in the sink right before leaning into me.
"He's telling you the truth, Sloan."
He walks away, and that's when I can't control the tears any longer. I don't know what to believe, who to trust, who to be mad at, who to love. I go to the sink and wash spaghetti sauce off my hands. I need out of this house. I walk to the back door and yell over my shoulder, "Your fucking spaghetti is ready, you goddamn asshole motherfuckers."
34. Carter. I rinse out the last of the bowls and place them in the dishwasher. Asa never made it down to eat. Sloan never came back inside. I texted Dalton a few minutes ago and asked him to go upstairs and check on the status of Asa before I risk going outside and talking to Sloan. I wipe down the countertop and start the dishwasher. I hear Dalton coming down the stairs at the same time I get a text from him. Dalton. "He's passed out naked on his bed. Looks like he'll be that way for a while, but I'll text you if he starts to come downstairs. Make sure your phone is on." I double and triple check the sound and vibrate settings on my phone, then slide it in my pocket. I head outside to smooth things over with Sloan. She's in the middle of the swimming pool, floating on her back, staring up at the stars. She doesn't look at me when she hears the back door shut. As I'm making my way toward her, I notice her shirt and jeans are thrown over a lounge chair. Fucking hell. She's swimming in her underwear. That may be normal practice for her around here, but it just feels like I'm stepping on a landmine by being out here while she's not technically in a bathing suit. I reach the edge of the pool and stare down at her, but she still won't look at me. The water is covering most of her face, but with the light from inside the house, I'm able to see the redness in her eyes. It's kind of fucked up if you think about it. She's upset that I might be messing with other people, but all the while she's sleeping in another man's bed every night. Hell, she fucking kissed him just to spite me earlier. But I get it, and I don't blame her, because I know how much she was hurting, how much she is hurting. And that's the hardest part of this. It's not that I'm about to have to convince her that I really do have feelings for her. The hardest part is knowing what she feels right now as she doubts them. If I could just come out and tell her the whole truth, it would make things so much easier. but that's a violation of my job. It would be disobeying a direct order from Ryan. And as unstable as Asa is right now, the less Sloan knows, the better. When Asa mentioned Tilly in the kitchen, the color completely drained from Sloan's face. I could have killed him right then and there. Sloan fans her arms out and kicks her legs, giving herself a push back toward the middle of the pool. He forgot to turn off the pool heater this weekend, she says quietly. It feels really good. I think I might just stay here forever. Her voice is sad. I want to kick off my shoes and dive in the water and stay there with her forever. Just not in this pool or at this house. What's her name? She asks, still quiet and staring at the night sky. I squeeze the back of my neck, wondering how much I should actually reveal. Tilly? She laughs, but not because she finds it entertaining. Is she your girlfriend? I sigh. She's just a friend, Sloan. Sometimes she does favors for me. Sloane's whole body sinks under the water. She sinks all the way to the bottom. When she emerges, she's shooting daggers at me. It isn't until I see the look on her face that I realize what I just implied. Not those kinds of favors, Sloane. She pushes her wet hair off her forehead, and I try not to look at any part of her other than her face, but it's really difficult when she's soaking wet. What favor was she doing for you Friday night that required you to have your hands all over her? I hate how calm she is because I know she's raging on the inside, which means she's likely to explode any minute now. I feel like I'm standing next to the edge of a volcano. Answer me. What favor was she doing for you Friday night? She repeats. Her eyes are pleading for honesty, so I give her honesty. She was helping me convince Asa that I'm not interested in fucking you. I don't have to be staring at her chest to notice her gasp. She tries to hide it, though. She stares at me for a moment and then dips under the water again. She swims to the shallow end and then stands up and walks out of the pool. Both her bra and underwear are nude, completely see-through, and making me paranoid.